Tonight we're going to take you to one of the most beautiful parts of the world, and this is far north Queensland and far northern Australia. Travel writer and photographer Rod Imey is back with us tonight. He's done a little adventure cruising, and he's going to talk a little bit about the top end and just some of the magic that he discovered recently. G'day, Rod.
Tony, how are you?
Not so bad. Kakadu, Arnhem Land, Cape York, places that we love to visit by four-wheel drive, but you've done it slightly different here. You've gone the coastal route.
Yeah, look, I did, Tony. Some years ago, I did take the four-wheel drive up to Cape York, and I've done a couple of drives through Kakadu and touched on Arnhem Land, but nothing particularly adventurous. I mean, lots of people do it, and we see what we see from the, you know, out the car windows. But to take the coastal route, to travel out of Cairns as we did, pop into the little islands and the communities along the east coast of Cape York, through Thursday Island and the Torres Strait Islands, then across the Gulf of Carpentaria to the top of Arnhem Land, Tiwi Islands, and then finally into Darwin. It really was a whole new perspective on that part of town, from the coast.
Are they all Aboriginal and Islander communities?
Traditionally, yes, and this opens up a whole kettle of worms, if that such an analogy exists. What happens is that over the years, the traditional communities have been relocated. We all know the story about how the communities were moved into settlements, sometimes for their own goods, for their perceived own good. During the war, the settlements were moved into places like Hope Vale, just north of Cooktown, because the army were afraid that the welcoming Aboriginals would assist the Japanese finding food and water and so forth. So, and because the Aboriginals had hundreds of years of tradition of dealing with seafarers from all over the place, and we can talk about that a little bit later on.
Absolutely. Well, Thursday Island, I know, is largely Melanesian.
Correct. Absolutely.
And so that's a little bit different. And a fair bit of interaction, I believe, between Aboriginal peoples in that area and the tribal people who visit from Indonesia.
Yeah, well, that's something. I mean, a lot of this discovery was stuff that I really didn't know about. I'd heard bits and pieces, and I thought, finally putting the whole story together, and it was really, really interesting. And that's a lot of credit to the two lecturers, Dr. Sandy Scott and Ian Morris, who were travelling aboard the Oceanic Discoverer as we did the trip. And having someone like them with interpretive lectures and discussions really help you understand the history and the cultural significance of the places you're visiting. Plus, we had Danny Gordon, who is a Yitawarra elder whose traditional lands are of Cape York, travel with us for the first part of the trip up to Thursday Island. And to have the traditional owner's interpretation of these sites interpreted to you as you're visiting, as you're seeing the rock art, as you're seeing the land, is a whole new perspective again, and it's not to be understated. It really is quite transformational, to use a hackneyed word.
Are there major rock art places in that area of North Queensland?
Surprisingly, there are lots and lots. We, we dotted our way up the east coast of the Cape, Lizard Island, people will be familiar with the luxury resort, but has had a lot of Indigenous significance as well. The story of the Watson family, who were unfortunately harassed by the Aboriginals, which turned into a tragedy. That's a whole other story. Stanley Island, which has a lot of significance to the local Yitawarra people. I hope I'm saying that correctly. And the cave paintings there depict sailing ships of all kinds of types and all kinds of countries. You've got European many-masted ships, plus you've got the smaller Macassan sailing vessels, which would come down and harvest the Trepang, the Bêche de Mer. And this interaction between Aboriginals right across the top and the Macassan fisherman is centuries old.
I guess you'd have to know it's there, so you would have to have some sort of guide to know exactly where to look.
Well, you would, and these sites are obviously preserved because, and this is another thing that I learned, was that the tradition, the heritage and the tradition of rock painting and cave painting is something that is passed down in a very special ceremony from father to son, etc. And unfortunately, with the dislocation of those communities that we mentioned before, that tradition has been severed and irreparably severed. The rock art that we see is the end of the line. And I was told with a very sorry face that by Danny that when this is gone, when it's faded and perished, that'll be it.
So does the art differ, and does the Indigenous culture differ dramatically between islands and locations?
Look, there's a lot of similarities between the different cultures. Some of the societal structures and interactions, which is incredibly complex, and I couldn't begin to explain that to you now, but a lot of that is similar. For example, we were taught at school, at least I was, that the Aboriginal people are a nomadic people, that they're off on walkabouts and wandering all the time. Well, that's not true. They wander, or if that's the right word, within their own territory, within their clan boundaries, and but not like from one side of the country to the other. They've got a very regimented order and hierarchy within their clan structures that I didn't know about as well.
Rod, how often do these cruises take place? Seems like a bit of a secret.
Well, it is a bit of a secret, and not deliberately well kept. It's just happened that way. Now, talking from Coral Princess Cruises' point of view, it's an opportunity for them to visit these places as they're relocating their vessels from Cairns, which is their home port, over to the Kimberley, where they spend several months of the year very, very busy in the Kimberley region.
It's become a very popular cruising path across northern Australia. It used to be that no cruise ships went there. Now there's quite a few.
Well, there still are a few, and I still think that the bigger ships don't have the access. We've talked about this before, whether you can't get into the smaller places. So we're stopping at tiny little sandbars of islands, which are breeding grounds for egrets and terns, and these tiny little rock art sites, which we get the opportunity to have interpretive tours like people like Danny. So the big ships, unfortunately, sail past in many occasions. They might stop at Lizard Island, they might stop at Thursday Island, but little places like Forbes and Creech and Tiju Reef, Stanley, Thursday Island, we didn't, you wouldn't get there on a big ship.
Tell us a little more about the Indigenous experience. Australian Aboriginal tourism can run a little bit hot and cold.
Yeah. Now, again, I try not to step on the landmines here because people, I'm sure, have had some sort of experience visiting a theme park, or I think of the name of the group who escapes me at the moment, who do a very good job, and they're very well known out of Cairns and Kuranda. The dance group there. It is a bit of a themed or stylized experience, however, it does have the opportunity to convey some of the significant points of the Aboriginal culture. However, what we were seeing were genuine communities living pretty much as they have done since DOT, without too much European influence. Of course, you can't escape it completely, but to see these people in their own lands, in their clan territories, living pretty much with their societal structures intact is really special.
Yeah, so you both had traditional and white guides together on the trip. I mean, how did they work together?
Well, pretty well. I mean, to have a white person, as academically and well-versed as they may be, try and describe to you the significance, the spiritual significance of an Aboriginal site, really, it doesn't work. It doesn't translate. You really need to have that Aboriginal person.
I mean, we've obviously, as Australians, heard a lot about the relationship between Aboriginal people and the land, and we understand it on a superficial basis, I guess.
We do. And I think the Northern Territory, a year or so back, launched a campaign called Share Our Story. Now, that might sound a bit superficial with a tagline, Share Our Story, but that really is the crux of it. The Aboriginal people do have a very, very strong sense of history and heritage, and the story is what they share. And unfortunately, they don't have libraries and books and television and things that we do.
It's been one very positive thing I think the ABC has done. We've actually captured a lot of these languages that I guess have a possibility of fading out, and we've got a lot of the languages on tape now. And plus we've also taken the trouble to find out some of the stories and to capture them for posterity.
Well, I was lucky enough to hear the local languages in a couple of places, and to one of our lecturer Ian Morris's credit, he actually speaks several of these languages, which is amazing. He was able to translate some of the stories for me, so that was particularly special. And obviously Ian, with his lifetime's work in that area, was able to communicate on a very special level with these people.
So is it exclusively on the ship and then a day visit, or do you actually stay a day or so in the community?
Well, otherwise the itinerary is pretty much as you would see on many of the adventure cruises that we've talked about previously. There'll be a day at sea, there'll be shore excursions, maybe one or two a day. Because of the distances we had to cover on this trip, we didn't get quite as many shore excursions as you might if you're in a concentrated region. But yes, the itineraries did run pretty traditionally. We would stop, we would visit the communities, we'd interact with them. And particularly when we're in the Arnhem Land, Tiwi Islands, Melville, Bathurst Island, that we were getting to see some really historical sites. It was a big thrill, for example, to go to Bathurst Island and to see the church and the radio shack where the first message was sent back to Darwin when the first Japanese wave of bombers, and people might remember that from the movie Australia.
Absolutely. Aboriginal art, we've mentioned it a couple of times in passing, but you've got an opportunity to actually see it being made, and I guess you understand it a little bit better.
Well, I do, a lot better. Now, Aboriginal art has been a bit of a contentious point. There have been lots of discussions about the authenticity of Aboriginal art, people who don't have the right authority to create works of art. Well, I can tell you that the places that I went to, and I visited little places like Gawa School and Thursday Island and Maningrida and Tiwi Islands, places where the communities set up their own art schools with some government funding, and they're producing some sensational stuff, and you can meet the artists and pick up stuff. And I would say, if anyone look up some art, Elko Island is the place. That's the big tick for me.
It gives people an opportunity to actually support the communities as well. I think everybody appreciates that there's some fantastic art that is produced, but you'd like to see it going back to the communities and to actually make a difference.
Well, that's an extremely good point, because self-sufficiency has a lot to do with self-respect, and the being able to produce really stunning works of art and get decent money for them, and not through some middle person in a CBD art gallery. It's going to the artist, to their community, and a lot of these communities are dry communities, as we know, so we don't see some of the ugly side of that that we may have in our minds as a preconception.
Thanks for telling us about it,
Tony, always a pleasure. Look forward to coming back again.
Yeah, Rod Imey is the editor of Cruise Passenger Magazine's annual Adventure Cruise Guide.